Good afternoon. It's Carolyn Blanchard for Mr. Lamberth. Today I'm trying to convince you that this man needs a new trial because the judge permitted use of his murder case for impeachment purposes and because the judge permitted use of the 9/11 tape that was produced in the middle of trial or shortly after trial began. Mr. Lamberth was involved in an assault, and then he fled, and then was later, about 20 or 30 days later, arrested, essentially. But during that arrest by an undercover officer, the undercover officer was shot and died, and the prosecuting body chose to try Mr. Lamberth on the murder case first. And he was convicted. And then tried Mr. Lamberth on the case we're addressing today. And prior to trial, defense counsel asked the judge to not permit impeachment with that murder case, but the judge said, I'm going to do it. And I submit that's an incorrect interpretation of the law because the prosecuting authority was looking at two live cases, essentially, and chose, made their own choice, which one to try first.
Is there any rule that says they have to try one or the other first?
Well, I would say the constitutional rule of due process that my client has the right to testify, and he was essentially denied that right, or his right was impeded by the trial judge in permitting this impeachment with the murder.
And you're there just talking about the due process as opposed to any other basis?
Well, that's essentially the basis. Okay. It wasn't a fair trial because my client, his right to testify was chilled by this.
What if they had done it the other way? What if they had tried the first crimes first and now it was the murder trial and now they wanted to use the other crimes to impeach him? Wouldn't it be the same result that once again he's going to be chilled from testifying because he has prior convictions?
Well, true, but this murder case, the jury was moved to a different jurisdiction in order to pick a panel. And they were meticulously screened to see if anyone knew of this murder conviction, but yet the judge would just permit the murder conviction to be used for impeachment. And this man, Mr. Lamberth, had other crimes that he could easily be convicted on. I've submitted the case law, and the judge relied on Bradley, saying, it wasn't a special condition. He said that prosecution didn't intentionally, I guess. I don't, you know, because Mr. Lamberth had these other convictions to be impeached with, the judge more or less said, well, the one more doesn't matter. Well, he just spent 2 days screening a jury, make sure they don't know about the murder, but yet he will allow impeachment with the murder and tell the jury about the murder. It just doesn't seem fair. I don't believe it is fair.
Let me just ask this. Out of the Bradley opinion, it states, initially we observe that section 1390.101 refers only to convictions, not to prior convictions. Is that correct?
Well, yes, but then there's case law that Bradley says that there can be exceptions.
Okay, but what would be the exception?
Well, Bradley essentially says that the prosecutor is manipulating the convictions to.
That wasn't the position below, was there, that there was a manipulation?
Right, the judge said no manipulation. But I'm saying that Bradley says it didn't limit it to that one issue, and that there could be other special circumstances. It uses a plural, it has an S on that circumstances, and that this is a circumstance where this charging body chose to do the murder first.
What's the precedent on special circumstances? I mean, what cases do we have to look at as to what constitutes a special circumstance?
Well, I don't know if you have any, but in my brief, I've cited the various cases. Most of these cases, I'll say first in time case should be tried first. Second in time case should be tried second. And this Commonwealth v. McIntyre says that if the one prosecuting body chooses to try the second case first, then they don't get to use that second conviction for impeachment in the first in time case.
Blanchard, isn't McIntyre, I assume that's the Pennsylvania case, is when you principally rely on, I think, isn't it?
Right. I don't know if I principally rely on it, but that certainly gives me...
Do you have another case that found special circumstances as a violation of due process?
No.
Okay, so let's start with the premise. That's your principal case that's most helpful to you.
Sure.
And in that case, isn't it different than this case? They tried the less serious crime first. It's not a matter of chronological commission of a crime, is it? It seemed manipulative because they tried, normally try a more serious crime first, and here clearly the more serious crime, not to minimize this crime, was the actual murder case, was it not, of a police officer?
Well, I would suppose so. Certainly it carries greater time, although this man got equal time for both cases.
Because this was habitual.
Right. But, I don't think McIntyre referred to it as a special circumstance. They just said what should be done. And they say if the more serious case, if there's a conviction and that's the second in time case, and that impeachment, that should not be used for impeachment in the first case, the first in time case. So.
I think the difficulty that we have is there is a rule of prosecutorial discretion, and what's an improper exercise of prosecutorial discretion. It seems that in the McIntyre case, the court found was believing there was prosecutorial misconduct because they tried the lesser first in order to increase the ability to convict of the greater. And here they went ahead and convicted of the greater first, and it sounds like under these circumstances, the prosecutor, there's no opportunity for the prosecutor ever to use the prior conviction, at least in your argument. The result I get is, doesn't matter which one you try first. You can never use, when there are two pending crimes, doesn't matter which you try first. You try one, you go to the other one, and you can't use the prior conviction. Because it chills the right to testify.
Well, that's not my argument. I think first in time case should be tried first. Or if it's not, then the conviction for the second in time case should not be used as impeachment for the first in time case.
The case on which you rely is the opposite, I think.
Well, not the...
Not Bradley, but McIntyre.
McIntyre. Well, it states on page 261, should I read it?
Oh, go ahead.
If for some compelling reason the local trial calendar or the orderly administration of criminal justice is better served by trying a subsequent offense first, then a criminal record so created should not be admissible against the defendant in his later trial for an earlier murder. So I don't think the severity of the conviction is the important thing.
So it's just first in time. It is the issue of try them in the order in which they were committed.
Right. And that's essentially what most of the cases are. Most of the cases are the man gets convicted, the appeal's pending, he picks up a couple more cases, the new trial is granted, and then, I mean, all these things are one after the other, isn't the prosecutor doesn't have discretion.
Sorry to interrupt. Isn't the point the credibility of the witness is being attacked as of the time of trial?
Well,
what's his status at the time of trial?
But who picked the time of trial? The prosecution.
Well, but it's the status of the witness.
Well, yes, but who created the status, the time status?
Well, if there was a conviction, we could assume the defendant did.
Well, the defendant committed in second in time.
But the credibility is what the question refers to, not what happened.
Well, yes. But I think for due process, for a defendant's due process right, he should be tried according to when the time of the crime. Because it's prosecution manipulation of what's going on.
And it would be unconstitutional for the prosecution to make that decision, to have that discretion. I mean, what I'm understanding you say is prosecution, as a matter of law, should not have that discretion, because if the prosecution has that discretion, then it's going to violate the defendant's due process right. So he has a due process right, and if I understand it correctly, to have them tried in the order in which they occur.
Or not be able to use the second in time conviction for impeachment.
Okay, so if you do them in the order in which they occurred, then you could use it for impeachment. But if you do it in reverse order, that would in effect be prosecutorial misconduct, and therefore the consequence would be you can't use it for impeachment.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, and then we get to the 9/11 tape. The 9/11 tape is just a shocking thing in itself, and a mother stating that her son is stabbing her daughter, essentially. And this case was pending for about 2 years before this trial occurred. And the defense, of course, asked for all the tapes, but the officer sitting there during trial of this case starts thinking and starts really looking for this tape and comes up with it. And while it was provided after jury selection before opening statement, there was no time for counsel to look at that. There wasn't an adjournment to listen to the tape. There wasn't an adjournment. The defense counsel couldn't effectively listen or respond to this tape until the judge stopped the trial at the end of the day, and then they started addressing this issue.
The defense counsel at trial asked for a continuance or adjournment?
Not that I could see.
So it's not really something that's a proper issue on appeal, whether there should have been some continuance.
Well, I think the judge could have sua sponte given it.
Right, but on appeal, an appellant can't complain about something that the appellant never requested, absent plain error or some other high standard.
That's correct. I think I referred to it as the judge could have granted an adjournment.
Let me understand, because let me ask a question, because I understand the record differently than the way you're presenting it. As I'm understanding it, the prosecution at about 1:30 in the afternoon disclosed this recording to the defense counsel, but that the defense counsel did not bring it up to the judge until later that afternoon when all the proceedings were completed and then filed the motion. Am I wrong about that?
Well, I think that's what the record reflects, but if...
And if the judge didn't know about it, I mean, your premise is that somehow the judge should have done it right away at 1:30, but if
My premise is after they had this in chambers conference, which we don't know, I don't even know if this trial judge heard this tape before he made his ruling. And I think that's crucial to this case, because it's such a shocking thing.
What we have, if I understand the record correctly, they discussed it, and then there was an overnight recess, and defense counsel had an opportunity to, and the defendant as well, had an opportunity to listen to the recording overnight, and then the judge ruled the next morning. Am I right about that?
Correct.
Okay, so then as of the next morning, what is it that you would have had the judge do?
Well, I think the judge could have asked parties if they wanted an adjournment, but... You know, everybody was off in a different jurisdiction, and I think everybody wanted to get this thing done. The judge especially, I think. The judge, well, First, he should have not permitted any use of the 9/11 tape. That's my...
Your time's expired, but I'm going to allow you to continue. We've been asking a lot of questions. Go ahead.
It should have been a mistrial because the prosecution should have produced this tape. Once they really looked for it, they could find it. And it's shocking to me that after 2 years in some, I don't know, misdemeanor case, whatever this tape was connected to, that tape is still available. It's just, and was nobody really investigated this tape. There just wasn't time. And the judge knew from the mini opening that defense counsel was going to say, or told the jury already, that Mrs. Lambert did not see what happened. And then here comes the tape. Mom's giving a blow-by-blow description of what happened. So the judge should have known that this remedy, the sanction for the Rule 16 violation, was not really a sanction because he's already told what the testimony was expected to be.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Brady?
May it please the court, I'm Christine Brady, registration number 24779, representing the people. On the first issue, the use of the prior conviction for impeachment, I'd like to respond to a few things that the defense is arguing. We start out with the Lemons case. That's a case that's cited by Bradley. It's cited in our briefs. And it puts forth the general rule that prior convictions are admissible for impeachment purposes. And in order to get that prior conviction suppressed, the defense must allege at least a prima facie case of a constitutional violation. That's the general rule. The only allegation here is that the prosecution tried the second offense first, the murder, before the less serious offense. There's no allegation by the defense that the DA's choice was a due process violation in and of itself. Now, the trial court, based on that, the trial court found that the defendant already had three prior convictions, and indeed he did, theft, burglary, and I believe the third one was trespass. So the court found that there was no prima facie case, there was no case at all that the prosecutor intended to create a prior felony record. And as a matter of fact, as the defense seems to concede in their brief, a very good reason for trying this case first was, first of all, because it was only within 20 days of the first offense. So there's an exercise of discretion there as to which one goes first. But it was the seriousness of the crime. It was a police officer who was murdered. And this is the type of a hot issue in the community. The community wants this issue resolved. Now, the defendant complains here in the brief and here today that the problem is that the prosecution's choice chilled his right to testify. Under Bradley, that's not enough. Bradley says that the defendant must show that the sole reason for changing the order of the trials was to create a prior felony conviction. Now, the defense says here today that Bradley left open the type of special circumstances that a defendant could show that would require suppression of a prior conviction, that the order of trials is not the only circumstance. It's not clear from Bradley that may be true. All of the cases that Bradley cites are basically this issue, the order of the trials. And this is, in fact, what the defendant is complaining about in this case. There's no other due process violation that's alleged. Now, the defendant also relies here today on the case of McIntyre. That's the case that's cited in the briefs. It is a Pennsylvania case. That case, the facts of that case are distinct. They tried the less serious case before the murder case. And they did it, as the court found there, they did it because the defendant did not have any priors. And they assumed that they could get an easier conviction on the less serious, create a prior conviction so that they can obtain a conviction in the murder case, or at least they could prevent the defendant from testifying. The later case of Zapata, which is also cited in the briefs, it is also a Pennsylvania case. It clarified that McIntyre was limited to its facts, that the holding in McIntyre, that the offense first in time must be tried first, that is limited to the facts. Specifically for that reason, that there is an intent there to try the more serious second, so that they can use the less serious for impeachment. And then Zapata states the general rule, it reiterates in that case, credibility is attacked at the time of trial, not the time of the offense. And then the defendant has alleged, at least below, alleged as prejudice, that it was the nature of the crime, that was the due process violation. The defense was concerned that the jury would not treat the murder of a police officer the same way it would treat some other felony conviction. In other words, perhaps the jury would look at it as a heavier weight and use it not just to attack the defendant's credibility, but to use it to convict him. Well, you know, he killed a police officer, so we're going to convict him in this case, which is also an attempted murder. That prejudice, though, the trial court addressed that. And the trial court said, well, the only thing that the prosecution will be able to impeach the defendant with if he testifies is the conviction itself, the second-degree murder, and the sentence. And that's it. That the prosecution would not be able to elicit anything at all about the victim, especially that he was a police officer, or anything else, just those two facts. So that is the way that the trial court cured that prejudice. And then finally, in the brief, the defense relies on the case of Simmons, cites that case. There, the defendant truly was forced to choose between two constitutional rights. He had the right to testify, a Fourth Amendment right to testify at the suppression hearing and not be impeached with that information. Anything that he would say could not be used against him in the subsequent trial. That was a Fourth Amendment right that he had. There's no Fourth Amendment right or any other kind of right to have your convictions suppressed, absent a prima facie showing that there's been some constitutional violation. On the second issue, the trial court's denial of the motion for mistrial, the Rule 16, the late disclosure of the 911 call. Just a few points about that. The trial court did rule that there was a technical violation of Rule 16. And it ruled that way because it found that the prosecution did exercise due diligence. It was just unsuccessful because of a mistake by the police department.
Question, sorry to interrupt. Does the record reflect why the 9/11 tape was not turned over timely?
It does. It was not turned over because they could not find it. And the reason why they could not find it is because for some reason the recording of the 911 call was tacked on to an unrelated 911 call in a separate case that had nothing to do with this case.
Well, how did they end up finding it?
That part is unclear. As late as the Friday before trial, and this is in the record, there are emails that are going back and forth between the defense and the prosecution asking, where is the 911 tape? Do you have it? The prosecution stating, we're still looking for it. We can't find it. We don't have it yet. As soon as we have it, we will produce it. And that's the Friday before trial. As a matter of fact, I think even into the weekend. That's all we have on that. So the trial court did sanction the prosecution. The trial court, as a sanction, told the prosecution that it was prohibited from using the 911 tape in its case in chief, and that it could only use it to impeach the witness, in this case, which was the defendant's mother, who made the 911 call. If she failed to recall that she made the 911 call, or basically denied that she had made it, or denied any of the substance of the call, that was the sanction.
On to the argument that at the time the court issued that, quote, sanction, it was really no sanction at all from the beginning, because it was known that the mother would not recall or claim not to have recalled the substance of that 911 call. Wasn't that known at the time of the ruling by both sides?
It's not clear that it was known by the trial court. I do believe it was known by both the parties.
The prosecutor at the time of the ruling must have been smiling and saying, this is no sanction at all. We're going to get this in, not only to impeach, but once it's used for impeachment in substance.
The prosecution may have been smiling, but that's not really the rule or the standard, that if the prosecution realizes they have some kind of advantage, they cannot offer the 911 tape. And it was up to the trial court to weigh the circumstances. The trial court has to decide what is the least drastic sanction. Certainly total exclusion is a very drastic sanction, as well as declaring a mistrial very drastic. And that's in the case law cited in the briefs. So the trial court did what it could to sanction.
Let me ask you a variation on Judge Connolly's question. The trial court there saying, okay, I'm going to limit your use of this to impeachment. Well, what use could the prosecution have made of it in its case in chief in any event?
Actually, the prosecution could have used it as substantive evidence to actually prove the crime. This is quite a common thing, and that's why this was a sanction, not to allow the prosecution to use it. Generally, a 911 tape is admissible. Even with all the screams and all the other strange things in the background, because it's the most probative and the most comprehensive of evidence that the prosecutor could have, particularly when it corroborates witness testimony, as it did in this case.
Well, it's an excited utterance and a present sense impression that's non-testimonial under Crawford, right?
That's correct. And also they can have, I believe it was a case where the dispatcher was brought in to as foundation to,
authenticate.
To admit, to authenticate it and to admit it. And for that matter, the prosecution could have also admitted the call screen history, which is the next thing that I wanted to respond to. The defense down below gave two reasons why this 911 tape should be totally excluded. The first reason was that it was a considerable surprise. And the record somewhat refutes that. The call screen history, which is in the record, does show all the facts of this case, and it shows everything that the witnesses testified to. Namely, it identifies the defendant by name as the stabber. It identifies the victim. It identifies that the defendant did flee the scene in his Bronco, in his car. All of that information was in the call screen history. And the defense did have possession of that, and they knew that those were the facts in the 911 tape. And this, of course, the second reason why it wasn't a considerable surprise is because, as I had said earlier, even into the weekend, the prosecution had told the defense, we're still looking for the 911 tape. We haven't found it. We're still looking. So although they didn't find it first thing Monday morning, they found it pretty soon after. And the defense had to have known that at some point it might be found before trial. The other reason that the defense gave for total exclusion was that they claimed in a just very vague and conclusory way that it would change the approach to the defense. They didn't really specify what different defense or what their approach would be. The theory of defense was self-defense. and even from the, just the call screen history, but if you add the victim's testimony, the witness's testimony, the two different witnesses, that the defendant was the stabber, then self-defense is the defense, and the defense didn't identify anything else. So based on that, the trial court said no exclusion, complete exclusion, no mistrial. However, it did grant the defendant's request for an instruction to the jury. And they, the trial court did instruct the jury about what had happened, just to explain any difference between the opening statement and what was actually presented at trial. The whole thing was explained. And then the defense was given very wide berth in closing argument without any objections from the prosecution to explain what had happened. And the defense certainly took that wide latitude and ran with it because he claimed that the prosecution had hid this 911 tape.
Brady, let me just jump in, and you said something that I think, as I understand, and you pointed out in your answer brief, this was actually produced, I thought, before the full opening statements and before any witnesses were called. There were many opening statements of voir dire or something, but it wasn't. I know, as Judge Carpelli pointed out, I think it was first raised after two witnesses testified, but then at that time and the next morning they made a record that it had been produced before the lunch break or at the lunch break, wasn't
right.
it?
Right. The defense said very specifically that the prejudice to the defense was that it was produced after the voir dire, which the voir dire was based on no 911 tape, apparently, and after opening statements. That's a statement on the record by the defense.
I understand, just looking at the record, I thought there was a break, jury had been selected, and then there was a break, and then opening statements and the presentation of evidence occurred after lunch, I thought.
That could be one interpretation of the record. I'm just going on what the defense stated. They stated that they, perhaps what they meant was they didn't know the content. Because they were in the middle of proceedings, they didn't know the content of the 911 tape until after opening statements, because they definitely said their opening statements were based on no 911 call.
Thank you, Ms. Brady. Thank you for your arguments, counsel. The case is now submitted, and an opinion will issue in due course.